204-DG-SNK-MOX. You know what I can't stand?
What?
I hate when my computer resets, updates.
Oh, yeah. That happened yesterday.
I know, same. It is a little thing, like, you want to postpone by 4 hours? Yes. Then you come
How
in and, like,
How about postpone by forever?
I know there are
reasons
for
it. It only gives you the option, right? 1 hour, 2 hours, 4 hours.
Above my pay grade, and it's not terrible. They have to put in all your... just like... Duh.
Well, and, you know, nothing around here works. So, like, half the time, whenever my computer updates, it's like, now you're disconnected from all your drives that you need to do your job. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is cool. I'm so glad this is happening.
Fortunately, I don't need any drives to do my job, so... But I do need you to have your drives. So, yeah. Did Andrew quit again?
I think he might be getting a guest.
Oh, okay. They must be early.
He walked off talking on the phone, so he's doing something.
Yeah, he fakes a lot of those. Razor's Edge?
Yeah, Razor's Edge is going to be varied today. I want to start by asking you guys about tiny homes. So last night I was watching the DNC coverage that I watched. I was watching a YouTube video about someone who built a tiny home on the back of a truck, like in the bed of a truck. And I was just watching them as they, you know, made their dinner and washed their dishes in their little sink. And then they got out their little, they just had like a little mat for a bed. And it looked so cozy. And I'm wondering if you guys have ever thought about this. Now take, you know, like significant others, families out of the equation, because the thought of like putting a family in a tiny home is pretty crazy. But if it was just you, do you think you could live the tiny home lifestyle?
I find it very attractive as well. I don't know that I could do the nomadic thing. Maybe if I had like an ideal situation where I had a beautiful piece of land with a little lake and I lived in a 1,000-square-foot tiny home cabin.
That's pretty big. For tiny homes are like 100 square feet.
I'm 100 square feet. Wheeler's 200
like,
square feet.
I know, man. Fit in the back of a truck, like not a U-Haul truck, but like a pickup truck.
No. Yeah, so I'm looking at one that's available on Amazon, Dave, if you want it. It says it's 19 by 20 feet.
There you go.
Are these like the like prefab sheds, essentially?
Not really a shed. I mean, it looks like a home. It's fancy looking. It's only $16,000.
They all look, it's easy to make it look fancy when it's 20 feet long.
But I'm just saying it's not a shed.
Well, you guys are making a great point because you can make the whole process seem very appealing through like a heavily curated YouTube video like I watched last night. And then it's time to go to the bathroom. And then you're like, oh, okay, well, where's this going to happen?
What I couldn't take, because I on my TikTok for a while, I was getting nomadic people. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we're in the Walmart parking lot and it's 3 a.m. and they're trying to kick us out. Like that would, I couldn't handle the stress of that.
No, I think a good solution for a tiny home is an apartment.
All right. That's fair. That's fair.
Shut that down.
But Rachel is totally right that they are so good at making the, I don't know what it is about how they're able to make the tiny home experience look glamorous.
Like, it looks so cozy.
Well, because, no one lives in one. And those of us who live in a too big home have the problems of a too big home. And so you see the opposite. You know, if you're married, you want to be single. You're single, you want to be married. You're big, you want to be little. You're little, you want to be big.
Yeah.
And you see something that's just so very simple. And you're like, yes, that's that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's now, how I'm going to retire.
I'm not talking about like the program that they have, the Veterans Community Project, where they have little neighborhoods of tiny homes for veterans. And there's a veterans center there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about that.
Cool.
I'm just talking about the general person that's just, this is what I want to do. Unless you're doing what you're talking about, Dave, which is either going out on a plot of land somewhere and getting away from people, I guess doing the nomad thing, although I'm with you. I think that's just, that seems hectic. Who's going to let me park my house somewhere?
I get it if you're 22 and an adventurer and this is going to be your version of when I went to Europe for a few months. That makes sense. Or I guess the other way, like if you're retiring and you're a free spirit and kind of a hippie, but I'm neither of those things. So
yeah,
I think I'd get tired of it really quick.
Mm-hmm.
So another thing that happened in my YouTube video of the tiny home was the first thing this young man did whenever he woke up, he literally rolled off of his little mat that he was sleeping on, rolled over because it's a tiny home, you know, and started cooking breakfast for himself. And I thought, I wish I was a breakfast person, but I'm just not. Like, I don't wake up hungry. I don't get hungry until noon or so. I have my coffee in the morning and that's good enough. But breakfast people just seem happier and better than me, because it's like, I mean, how great would it be to just wake up and have a full meal? I mean, that sounds incredible.
How great would it be to have someone make it for you?
Oh, yeah. That would be the best.
Yeah, I don't want to cook my breakfast. I'm just saying.
It depends on the day and time.
Like, if we go to breakfast, if I have a breakfast meeting, I love it. If I'm on vacation, I want breakfast every single day out at a restaurant. But at home,
I do it on the weekends. If I get up at 10:30, have a late breakfast.
That's called lunch.
Make some eggs.
That's lunch.
Lunch will be at 12.
So an hour and a half later, I have another 12:30. Full meal.
I don't mind making eggs and whatever's there. Usually there's not much, unless you went and bought it.
That's how it works.
That's how food works.
Yeah. specifically, I want to make sausage this weekend or something.
Ain't a lot of food here unless I went and bought food. Then I got food.
I love the cooking shows, which is basically all of them. Someone should do a real one where you open up your fridge and your fridge is dirty and kind of disgusting. And you're not sure if the cheese might kill you.
Yeah. Things are sticky when you pick them up.
When they have everything in a little ramekin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, you just pour it in.
Oh,
yeah.
Do you ever see those TikTok videos where there's one, I think her name is Midwest Mom. I think that's her handle if you want to try to look her up on TikTok.
That's my OnlyFans.
And the whole account is just her restocking the fridge, or I'm going to restock my daughter's mini fridge because her daughter has a mini fridge in her room, and she'll just put little squeeze yogurts in there and little sodas and stuff. And it's ASMR. So you just hear the soda cans clinking together as they go in the fridge. I can watch stuff like that for hours at a time. I'm not kidding. It does something to my brain where I just feel amazing.
I remember
when you
were obsessed with people living in apartments in Japan.
Yes, yes. I found this one YouTube channel that was a salary woman living in Japan, and it would just be her getting off of work, going by the 100 yen store and picking out a little treat.
Dollar store?
Yes, yes. They have all sorts of different things, just like Dollar Tree does, and then going home and cooking a dinner and just sitting around, and I would be like, this is the peak of entertainment to me. It does not get any better than this. It's hard to explain why to other people. You know, if you don't get it, you don't get
it. You're certainly not the only one watching it, because it's all over the place.
She's made a living off of it.
There's something about cozy content specifically that's just, it's just nice. It's relaxing. It's nice. A lot of times people are talking very soft. It's good for winding down.
You, my friend, should not be scraping the bottom of the barrel to pay your tags. You should be rich, because you're a legitimate freak. And with your car and the spiders and the mice, if you filmed all that,
you would get canceled for throwing the mouse into the intersection.
He'd find his audience.
That is crazy. Yeah, I might find the wrong audience that liked me throwing the mouse too much.
Let's see here. Okay. We kind of spent that subject, right? Let's move.
I mean, we got a lot out of it.
I do want to talk about this article I saw. It says teachers share how different students are in 2024 versus when they first started teaching. I thought this was very interesting. So here are some of the top answers that teachers submitted as to how their kids are different now versus 30 years ago, whenever they started. The level of curiosity, one teacher says, is almost non-existent today. They said, when I started in the 90s, there were always a handful of kids in every class that wanted to know why. But in recent years, it's either just tell me the answer or who cares, just mark it wrong. This is obviously anecdotal, but do you think part of that is just kids are used to getting the answer from Google or something?
Yeah, I agree with that. Eh.
Yeah.
There's not as much mystery. They don't sit there and go but why? They probably just pull out their phone and go, why does this happen?
Two, it's like when I went to law school back in the late 80s, the whole thing was teaching you how to find an answer. That's one of the misnomers about law school. Yes, you come out knowing some things, just rote, but it's mostly these are the books, these are the decisions, here's how you take them apart, here's how you argue them in front of a court. And to a certain extent, non-legal education was the same way. Here's the Dewey Decimal System. Here's a library card. Here's this. Here's that. Here's where you go find the books or the microfiche or whatever it happens to be. Now, none of that matters anymore because as long as you have a phone, and everyone does, you are 0.2 seconds away from an answer. Mm-hmm. And so I think kids think of it like, I don't need to know where the peace treaty after World War II was signed. I don't need to know that because if I ever do need to know that, I can just look at my phone.
Yeah, I remember back, this was like 2009, 2010, when smartphones had really first started to become popular. And one of my friends was at a bar underage drinking, and he was bragging to me about how he was like, oh, it's so awesome. You start to argue about something, then you just get out your phone and you have the answer.
Yeah.
And that always stuck with me because I was like, oh, yeah, that is cool.
Well, Wheels, you've talked about that with sports guys.
Do you guys have any idea?
Long nights of arguing over chicken wings about something, and
that, and you have any idea how many friends would drunk call me at like midnight because they're out having an argument at the bar with somebody in another town, and like, you can settle this for us. I'm like, now I can be like, just get your phone out, jerk. Sometimes it was annoying. I'm not gonna lie, because your drunken friends at a remote distance are not always very fun to talk to.
Right.
I also think maybe I'm wrong. I think kids don't care about stuff like that anymore because the era of a kid like the era of a kid like pondering something is long gone because if you give them 10 seconds to themselves, they're on TikTok.
Yeah, that's
or they're
point.
Or they're on YouTube or they're whatever. I just think like the since the era of the attention span has gone, so has the era of the pondering obsessive thought.
I do think we all need to accept though that we can't teach to the same way we did 30 years ago. And I think teachers get that, right? I mean,
I think they do
lots of friends and family members that are teachers. So, I mean, I know that they're trying to do those things. But, like, there was a time, I don't know when that time was, but there was a time when it would have been heresy to let kids do any math with calculators.
Yeah.
It would have been heretical. And by the time I was in high school, it was normal. We had calculators. We were allowed to use them in class. And I think this is a larger extension of that. But then what do we need to teach? I mean, I think that that's something philosophically
we should
be teaching more like critical thinking rather than memorization.
That everything we're saying is leading to humans having less general knowledge in their brain. And then I think the cheating epidemic, which has been over the past 10 years or so and continues to get worse with AI.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I would argue, I don't know that it's quite idiocracy, because I think there are smart kids graduating college, but I just don't know that they have much in their noggins. Does that make sense?
I guess, but I mean, how much do you have to store if you can have access to it?
That's our original point.
Like, think of it this way. How much water do you need to store on your property if you can just turn on the faucet all the time?
That's a lesser human, though. Let's say that your kid goes to school for accounting, and they have to learn that because that's how they're going to pay the bills. So they understand debits and credits and things like that. But they don't know jack crap about Gettysburg or, you know, Henry VIII or anything like that. To me, a well-rounded person is someone who does have some knowledge in their head accessible without their phone. Do you think that that's just a different kind of human now?
I would argue that, though I'm trying to say this the right way, if you go back 100 years, most people didn't know any of those things. And we would not have argued that they didn't. I mean, if you go back long enough, 150 years, more, people had one very specific knowledge.
They're a blacksmith.
You're the guy that takes care of the horses. You're the one that makes wheels. You're the wheeler. Like, you had one very specific area of knowledge. You would not have had general knowledge because it wasn't available to you. So I don't know. I think maybe we're in a cycle.
Maybe.
Where we're going to eventually kind of go back, not go back in time, but go back to the case being you need more specific knowledge than general knowledge.
Can I read one more of these? Because this next one is a sad one. And this is from teachers who are talking about how kids have changed now versus, you know, 30 or so years ago whenever they first started teaching. One teacher says, I can't show movies or videos anymore because it's boring to them. It's boring because they have Netflix on their phone and they can watch whatever they want at any time. It's no longer special to watch a movie at school. That stinks. That's like, come on, that's magic. Whenever, and I'm sure they're not wheeling out the, you know, the television.
They're not playing Skibidi Toilet.
Right. So they're not wheeling it out on a card anymore. They probably have like a flat screen installed at the front of the classroom and everything. But that there was nothing better than that back in the day. It was when it was like, oh my gosh, we get to watch a movie today. I don't care what you show me. It's better than class.
What could you, I mean, the thing that made that fun for us, it was that it was so different than what we normally got to do at school,
yeah.
Right? And it wasn't the same old boring reading, writing, arithmetic stuff. It was a break. It was different. So what would it be now? Like, what could you think of to be like?
To get kids excited.
To get kids out of a routine that's not about a screen, because they got screens all the time. Maybe it's just playing games?
Yeah, maybe like taking them outside or something.
Ah, recess. Oh, yeah. Man, we used to do that 2-3 times a day.
But they would probably only like that ironically. Mm. Like, hey, we're going to play a game called kickball. They'd be like, this is awesome because it's so stupid.
This is so kitschy.
I don't know. I think if you just tell kids go play, they will.
Do you?
Yeah. I mean, I see it with my nieces.
Yeah, but they're babies.
Right. Yeah. That's true. But I mean, Blair is old enough now to where she can be left to her own devices. And I hear her, you know, acting things out. And like,
I'm thinking more like 14-year-olds.
Okay.
Like, what can you
reward? Turn them loose. They go play.
Do they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
you're only around 14-year-olds who are obsessed with playing a game, though.
Well, like they're also obsessed with their phones. They all are also everything else. They are of their generation. But if you tell them, hey, you know what? You can go play Fungo Golf, which is the baseball thing. You take the Fungo bat and you play golf, hit the ball, and try to get. They'll do it forever. They'll be like, all right, yeah, let's go, let's go.
Couple pieces of audio.
Yeah, we can start with mine. I have a new favorite football player. I don't know if you have heard of Jamal Williams of the New Orleans Saints.
Oh, yeah.
But this is why he is my new favorite.
Go and see my cats, honestly. I got cats, and I know they are going crazy right now, wondering where their dad is at. So
I thought that was adorable. Yeah. Saw this on TikTok, and I'm like, they probably are going crazy, wondering where their dad is at. That is a very cute way of putting that. He went on, there's another TikTok where he was talking about cats.
Jamal Williams here. Just want to say happy International Cat Day. I want to say first thing what I love about cats, they're their own person, great personality, and they'll let you know if you're inner insides or S, because if they don't like you, they will not mess with you. Another reason I like cats is they're very quiet, honestly, and they're very lovable when they love you, honestly. And they just, beetles. Oh, another thing, I love cats. No matter what bugs you have in your house, lizards, anything, they will kill them automatically. I just love them. They are like the exterminators of my house, and I don't need to get an exterminator at all. Love cats forever.
Love cats forever.
That's
I just
funny.
Thought that was so cute.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
He's good at scoring touchdowns too, Rich.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
My cat just got a huge lizard in my house like 2 days ago.
You had a lizard in your house?
Like this big? Yes. Whoa. I get tons of lizards in my house.
He's doing the Obama thing.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Where do lizards live in Missouri?
That's enormous.
I don't know where they live. I mean, I don't live in Missouri, but there's tons
in Illinois.
There's tons of lizards. Like a
Andrew's
skink
house.
Or something. She chewed the legs
really?
Off of it. It was kind of.
Whoa.
It was flopping around.
Damn.
She's a monster.
Welcome back, guys. DGS and KMOX, 2:35. So I'm going to try to get through this without crying. I'm a crier. I cry if I get a bad parking spot. Very Scottish. It's on my 23andMe, like, cries at the drop of a hat. As you guys know, because you went through it with me, my mom passed away a couple weeks ago, and she was at Bethesda. And when she was in hospice, and towards the end, we learned about this No One Dies Alone, which I had never even featured in my mind that this could be a thing. But we utilized it for a few days. It was wonderful. And we have a couple of people here who are involved in it. Dr. Julie Strassman is the manager of support services at Bethesda. Melissa Helmskamp is a volunteer who was with my mom, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah. So
I sat with her on two different nights.
Yeah. So, Julia, let's start with you. Give us the overall Bethesda for people who don't know Bethesda. I now feel like a part of the family. Tell us about Bethesda. What makes you guys special?
Sure. Well, Bethesda has been around for 135 years now, and our goal is to be the premier provider of senior support in St. Louis. So we have everything from independent senior living, we have assisted living and memory care, we have long-term care, skilled rehab nursing, and then we have home hospice and home services.
I mean, everything you guys did was great.
Well, thank you.
It really was. I mean, we've all been, especially in your business, to nursing homes where you walk in and you're like, nope. Mm. You know, you've got the terrible smells and you can tell the people don't care. And I was there twice a day, every day, and I never saw anything where I was like, that's sketchy. Like, everything was above board.
I'm so glad. That's the experience that we want every family to have with Bethesda.
Yeah. So, Melissa, tell us about No One Dies Alone. Just kind of the history of it and...
Great. So the No One Dies Alone program is a program that we offer to families and patients who come in and need an extra level of care once you've arrived to the final stages of life, which is around the 24 to 72 hours of life. Mm-hmm. This is offered at the beginning when you're admitted and also when a patient becomes to that stage where they're going to need that extra level of care. We offer it in the 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. hours, in the overnight hours, so families can have respite and relax from their days that they've already spent with them. And also for families who aren't able to be in the area due to travel situations, or even families who may not have family located in the area or even with them.
How long has this been going on? This program.
Oh, goodness. What do you think, Julie?
So we revitalized the program in 2017, but the No One Dies Alone program is a national program, so it's been around quite a while. It actually started in a hospital setting where there was a hospital nurse who noticed that a lot of people were dying without someone at the bedside.
Yeah.
And so she was inspired to begin a volunteer program where people sit vigil.
And I know that people who are involved in hospice, you get to know the process very, very well. And some things are factual and some things are more opinion. But a lot of people had said to me along the way, it's wonderful that you're here, but she may need you to leave. Do you find that sometimes?
Oh, wow. We do at times. So every person is different. Some people want to have their loved ones with them, and so they will sometimes wait for a specific person to be at bedside with them. And other people, they kind of want that privacy, so they will wait until their loved ones step away in order to make that final transition.
Didn't you have a situation like that, Kev, where someone was waiting?
I did. Yeah, it was my grandmother. So everybody was there and in place but me. And I was coming from out of town, and I mean, within 10 minutes of my arrival, she passed. Mm-hmm. So it was, who knows? I don't know enough about it to know if that was a conscious effort or just random luck, but it was pretty weird.
Where do you find these rare people to do this, to sit with people overnight?
So that is a great question. I find that a lot of the volunteers come from all around St. Louis. There are people who have experienced loss in their past who want to provide a source of comfort to the future for their loved ones who are going out in the future. And then also people who just care about society in general and want to be a source of meaningful existence.
Yeah. So how does it work? Like on the ground, how does it work? Like, let's say that I volunteered and I say, okay, I can give you 2 to 4 a.m. twice a week. Is that common or are people on regular schedules?
Yeah, that's a great question. So really, it's as needed. So when we have a request, I send out an email to all of our hospice volunteers who sit NOTA, let them know what our shifts are, and then they come back to me. So for a lot of people, it's really a volunteer opportunity that doesn't come up necessarily every week or even every month. So So it's really a very flexible opportunity for a lot of people. It doesn't necessarily take a lot of time to be a No One Dies Alone volunteer. It just takes the availability at certain hours and that love for people.
And what about people who I'm sure would say, well, I have the heart for it, but I'm not a doctor, I'm not a nurse, I don't have the technical knowledge.
So we provide lots of training for our regular hospice volunteers and for our No One Dies Alone volunteers. And really, our job when we're sitting vigil is to observe, to make sure that the person appears comfortable. If anything does come up, with Bethesda, there are always nurses right there. And so really, it's just the compassion. It's just the willingness to be with that person in what is a very sacred and very vulnerable moment.
Melissa, tell us about your experiences with it. What has it added to you as a person?
So I originally joined the No One Dies Alone program in 2018 after the passing of my grandfather, and I saw so many people dying alone in the hallways of his hospice.
Wow.
So for me, I thought, what greater way to push on his legacy than to go back to St. Louis? He died in Florida, but to go back to St. Louis and provide this service to people. So I just Googled it. I was like, do people die alone? Is there a volunteer organization? And I found Julie and Bethesda, and I joined onto the program. And since then, I've sat vigil countless times and offered support and care to these end-of-life patients. And for me, it's just a sense of, it's a privilege, actually, to be able to offer this service to someone who's in their end-of-life care when the families are at their hardest times, to be a small piece of their comfort.
Is it, and I know everyone's different, every family's different, are there more similarities than there are differences, though, when people are at that stage? Like, do you see the same things over and over
again? It is very similar. There are different situations happening with each family, but there's so many similarities. And the end of it is just offering compassion and care and understanding that they're going through the hardest times of their lives.
Yeah. And sometimes it's very peaceful. Other times it's not so peaceful, right?
There have been times where you have to ask for an extra layer of care from the nurses.
Yeah.
And it's always a different situation with every patient. So we go into that room not knowing what we'll be seeing. But as volunteers, we have the intuition to be able to kind of judge, what does this patient need right now?
Yeah.
Do they need quiet? Do they need darkness? Do they need a hand to hold? Do they not want to hold your hand? Do they need extra medication? There's so many differences. When you go into the room, though, you're trained well enough to be able to observe them and know this is what that patient will need in that moment.
Yeah. I was amazed at like Chrissy and Diane, who was with us the whole time, and they said 1 to 3 days. And I wasn't like, you're wrong. I wasn't like calling them out, but it was 3 days. I mean, I guess you just get down to that point where you see it so often and you see the telltale signs and you really can just watch it, which having gone through it, when they would come in and say, do you have any questions? It was always, how much longer? Because that's really the only question, besides comfort, that's the only question you have is, do you think it's today? Do you think it's tomorrow? Do you think we should leave? Do you think we should stay? That you must get that just constantly all the time.
We do. Timeline is something that people always want to know, and we never know for sure. But there are signs and symptoms that we look for that can help us to make at least an educated guess.
Yeah. So I'm good at a few things. I'm bad at most things, but I'm good at raising money, which we're going to do for you guys. How do people, like right now, like on the ground, if they said, this sounds amazing, I want to donate, I want to donate my time, how do they do that?
Absolutely. So my recommendation would be to go to BethesdaHealth.org. There you can find information about the Bethesda Foundation. So Bethesda is a nonprofit organization. We've been in St. Louis 135 years, and our goal is to take care of seniors. So when you donate to the Bethesda Foundation, all of that money goes towards making sure that seniors who may have run out of their own money can still stay and be cared for in our facilities. So that's a great way to support this program, is to donate to the Bethesda Foundation. If you're interested in volunteering, if you go to BethesdaHealth.org, you'll see a page for hospice. And at the bottom of that page, there's also information on how to volunteer with hospice.
And Melissa, do a little 30-second live endorsement for people to do what you do. Like if someone's out there and they have the time and they have the heart for it, let's try and convince a few people to do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome to Bethesda Hospice Cares Volunteer Program. We would love for you to join us if you have a heart for serving, if you have a heart for spending time with the elderly population and those in end-of-life care. You can sign on by going to Bethesda Hospice Care's webpage, which is through Bethesda Health Group. So we would love to onboard you as volunteers. We have annual volunteer appreciation events. We have wonderful training sessions, and we have a great group of nurses, as well as CNAs and social workers to bring you on board and help you learn the tricks of the trade.
Is it people like men, women, old, young? Is it pretty much everybody?
We really do see people from all walks of life. And I think part of that is because most people have known someone who have been on hospice, and also because volunteering with hospice is so flexible. The great thing about volunteering with hospice is that for most people, they can do it on their own schedule. And so we have everyone from students to retirees to working people with children.
Okay, well, we'll put something together and we'll do it this fall or early spring next year. Thank you, ladies, so much for everything. Appreciate it. Quick break, right back, DGS. GS250. Everyone proud of me for getting through that without bawling?
I told you in the break, man. Well done. That had to be hard.
That was tough. I find myself at Schnucks. They're like, you want to use your rewards? I'm like, yes! Thank you! They're like, this guy loves his rewards. This guy loves donuts.
That's funny.
So we have some news from the Cardinals.
Again, yeah. So back-to-back days, we had some pretty significant roster news. They sent Nolan Gorman down, which...
strange timing.
I mean, yeah, you could wonder why maybe they didn't do it, yesterday when they did everything else. I don't know if anything changed or what, but Nolan Gorman to AAA. Look, he's been bad, man. There's just no other way to put it. You know, he was a part of last night's loss, right? He struck out with the bases loaded right after Paul Goldschmidt struck out with the bases loaded. But. You know, Nolan Gorman, like, if you, it's a pretty big drop off from the last couple of years where, you know, last year he was pretty solid. I mean, 27 home runs. And this is, by the way, despite missing like 35 games, hit 27 home runs. His overall numbers were about 16% above major league average, which is very good. It's not all-star level, but it's very good. Mm-hmm. Anything above average is good, but that's enough above average where that's a good player, right? Not just an okay player. But he's way below that now, and they're going to send him down. I'm sure we will see
him.
And
was that big leagues or was that AAA last year?
No, that was all in the majors.
Okay.
Yeah, and despite missing 35 games. So, you know, when you hit 27 home runs in essentially 75% of a season,
what are the top two or three things that happen when the bottom falls out of someone like that?
Well, I mean, in his case, he's just swinging and missing too much. And that can be a physical thing with the swing. It can be psychological, like in that you lose confidence. It can be just you get caught in between where you become too conscious of the breaking ball and you don't hit the fastball. Or you become too conscious of the fastball and you don't hit the breaking ball. You start guessing at pitches. And then when you guess wrong, things compound. Because even when you guess right, you're not going to get a hit every time.
Yeah.
You're still going to fail a lot of those times. But if you're guessing a lot and you're guessing wrong a lot, well, now you're just bringing everything down. To me, it's not a mechanical thing. It's an approach thing. Like he's got to get back to being able to recognize pitches a little bit better and make more contact. It's okay if he strikes out, but he's on pace to strike out 200 times.
So he goes down. Does someone come up?
Jose Fermin comes up, which I think a lot of people are going to be disappointed by, in part because I think most of us who follow the team look at Fermin as kind of a... he's role player, you know, up and down kind of AAA major league player.
Fine, not great.
Yeah, and I think a lot of fans would rather see more of a prospect like Thomas DeJacy, who plays middle infield, who can play some outfield, who hit, I believe it was 26 home runs at AAA last year.
So what do they say? Like, there's always like a statement. There's always a, here's why we sent this guy down. It's for his own good, blah, blah, blah. Have they put that out yet?
No, that'll come at the ballpark here in a little bit. So Matt Pauly's there. He'll talk to Ollie. He'll be a part of that. So Ollie will talk about it. I mean, I don't know if Mo will talk today after talking yesterday, but either way, I'm sure it'll be addressed with Ollie, and they'll say, look, we're sending him down to work on, like when they sent Jordan Walker down, we're sending him down to work on, you know, laying off sliders low and away, to work on hitting the ball in the air
more.
Why
does it feel like the wheels are coming off?
Because they are. I mean, they are. They've lost, what is it now, 7 of 8? You know, when you look at the trend line, right, you had that 2-month run where you were awesome. You know, 3 weeks ago, you're at the trade deadline, and you're adding players because you're in it. Right, I mean, you traded for Eric Fetty and Tommy Pham because you're in it. You're a couple games out of a wild card spot. For a period there, you were in the wild card spot. Right, you were in the third. Actually, got up to the second wild card spot. Got to within three and a half games of the Brewers in the division. So it wasn't that long ago, but really 3 weeks changed it. And it's everything. Right, they're not scoring runs, in part because the big guys aren't hitting. In part because even now some of the guys surrounding them, like Gorman, aren't hitting either. Your starting pitching has a 5+ ERA for the last 2 months, you know? So when you kind of add it all up, it does feel like the wheels are falling off because they are.
What does that do to the fandom psychologically when you had a great middle of the season?
Well, it depends on who you are, right? For a lot of people, they probably were like, okay, the Cardinals are normal. They're back to being what we expect. And others were like, ah, just wait. The shoe's going to fall. They're going to fall back to being the bad one. So I guess it depends on who you are. You either feel vindicated or you're mad.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.